Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Into who?
Dempsey. Dempsey will try and chip one! Wonderful! Absolutely brilliant! A sensational goal from Clint Dempsey may well have knocked Juventus out. Just one of the great Fulham moments. And it's lifted the roof off the old place.
It was the 18th of March 2010, in the last 16 of the Europa League. Fulham 4, Juventus 1. The most famous of famous nights at Craven Cottage. The result that we all bring up far too much in conversation. The result that we can use when backed into a corner. We could lose to nearly every team in the land and they can say, "You're shit, what have you ever won?" And we can say, "Yeah, but have you ever beaten Juventus?" On this night, Fulham had arguably their greatest ever result, their most dramatic comeback, and potentially most iconic goal all in one go. In this episode, we go back to that evening at Craven Cottage, ask whether it was the greatest game in the history of Fulham FC, and also debate whether a result of that magnitude could ever happen again. We start this podcast looking at what had happened just 1 week previous during the first leg in Turin. Fulham were fresh from beating holders Shakhtar Donetsk in the previous round and were cautiously optimistic going into the match that a shock could be on the cards. Things didn't quite go to plan for Roy Hodgson's side.
Connor comes in, the header comes in as well! Leg Natale inside 10 minutes! Perfect start for Juventus!
To get beyond Fulham here.
Oh! Jonathan Sabina with a beauty.
Just do with one goal. Be the away goal.
A two deflected, they have got it. Life in Fulham still. Dixon Atuhu to the delight of the travelling faithful. Atuhu hasn't dealt with it. Oh, it's off the post. Martin! David Trezeguet at the second time of asking.
So the Whites went into the home leg 3-1 down. The lineup for Fulham that night was as follows. Mark Schwarzer in goal, a back four of Paul Konchesky, the Thames Barrier, Breda Hangeland and Aaron Hughes with Stephen Kelly at right back. Damien Duff, Chris Baird, Dixon Atuhu and Simon Davies in midfield with Zoltan Gera supporting Bobby Zamora up front. No John Pansil, no Danny Murphy. Big exclusions from the Fulham side. Here is football journalist Philippe Auclair, who was in attendance that night at the Cottage. Did he or any of his fellow journalists give Fulham a prayer considering the deficit, the quality of our squad overall and a major blow with Danny Murphy suspended for the match?
I'll be honest, not quite, because despite all these arguments after the miracle that it was a Juve side which was aging, that they had their own problems and so on, and you know, even and the fact that Fulham, to be honest, had been quite splendid in the rest of the competition before that, so you think we'd seen it coming, but no, we didn't. We didn't at all. They're going to give Juve a decent game, just like they gave Roma a decent game, you know, in the group phase, for example. But this is where it's going to end. We tried to find an explanation when perhaps it would have been better not to find one.
Looking at our opponents, Juventus, then, they went into the game with this ridiculously strong starting 11. Antonio Clemente in goal, Fabio Cannavaro, a World Cup winning captain, Fabio Grosso, who was then substituted for Alessandro Del Piero, Jonathan Sabina, Felipe Melo, Hassan Salihamidžić, Mauro Camoranesi, Mohamed Sissoko, Antonio Candreva, who was actually substituted in the 28th minute for Zdeněk Gregera, who is a bit of a forgotten name later on in his career at Fulham, Diego and David Trezeguet up front. So many household names in there, World Cup winners, seasoned internationals. But as Adam Digby, a Juventus fan and an Italian football expert, explains, it was a difficult time for Juventus, a fallen giant that was still struggling to get fully back on its feet.
They were obviously, in 2006, they were relegated as their punishment for the Calciopoli scandal. And the real problems started a year later when they returned to Serie A. And instead of carefully rebuilding the team, they tried to just buy a couple of players to help that team continue. And obviously, with Del Piero, Trezeguet, Camoranesi, and Buffon, it was an ageing team. And they made a lot of expensive mistakes in trying to get the two or three players who they filled in the gaps with, trying to get those right. They bought Diego from Werder Bremen. They bought Felipe Melo from Fiorentina. And they really were just awful, awful signings that didn't fit with the team that they had, didn't fit with the coach that they had. They couldn't get the right coach. And it all really culminated with the happy moment for you guys, who the losing to Fulham. And that really was a bit of a watershed moment for Juve.
So whilst this may have potentially been a mismatch on paper, Fulhamish's Jack Collins thinks that we'd more than earned the right to give the old lady a game.
Fulham had already earned their right to take on a squad of this quality when they beat Shakhtar Donetsk in the round beforehand. And if you look at that lineup, you look at Fernandinho, Willian, Luis Adriano, Douglas Costa, who've all gone on to have wonderful careers, even the likes of Piatov and Dario Cerna, who have gone on and played in Europe for years and years and years. And Fulham earned their right to be at this table and then earned it even more with a win like this. And yes, it's easy to look back at it and think, how on earth did we do that? But realistically, Fulham were the better side that day, with a better side for the Craven Cottage leg against Shakhtar Donetsk. Yes, it was a little bit back to the wall over at their place, but who wants to go to the Ukraine and have a nice old game? So it is one of those where it's impressive in hindsight to look how good this squad was and why Fulham were even more incredible to have beaten them so convincingly. But ultimately, yes, we earned our place at this table, and then we showed exactly why we were there.
An occasion that even the most fanciful Fulham fans surely never thought that they would see. Craven Cottage has witnessed many things over the past century and a bit, but this is a landmark event as the sepia-tinted world of Fulham is invaded by Juventus.
The 6 o'clock kickoff was fast approaching on the banks of the Thames, and Fulhamish's Farrell Monk recounts his rush to get there for the early start.
It was kind of an odd day for me, because I remember actually I had travelled back up to London for a job interview because I was at uni at the time. So I didn't really have a lot of time to think about the game beforehand. It was more sort of like, I want to get there on time and make sure that I am there for kickoff, really, because it was an early kickoff at 6 o'clock. But I just wanted to be there for what was going to be a momentous occasion, regardless of the result come 8 o'clock or so that night.
Salihamidžić. Trezeguet had a swing at it. Diego tried to turn. And the bottom corner of the net found by David Trezeguet. There's a moment of hesitation as he picked himself up. And that's a hammer blow for Hodgson and Fulham.
It was a disastrous start for Fulham as David Trezeguet prodded the ball home at the Hammersmith end to make it 4-1 to Juventus on aggregate. Adam here tells me that really it should have been a formality from that point on.
Yeah, and from there you think, you look at Juve and you think, typical Italian team, they're 4-1 up, they're going to just see this out now. And even if they stop playing and just defended the way that we know that these teams have always been able to, the tie is going to be pretty comfortable from there. But I think really for Juve, it went wrong long before that. The whole goalkeeping scenario probably explains Juve's situation going into this game the best. Gigi Buffon was injured. He had back problems all of that season that really hampered him in the World Cup that following summer as well. His deputy, Alex Manninger, got injured in the build-up to this match, which meant the third-choice goalkeeper, Antonio Chimenti, was in goal. And after the match, he actually broke his hand punching a wall in the Fulham dressing room. He was so frustrated with his own performance. So Juve were really struggling after that. And the whole team just, it was a real mismatch and a real struggle. But again, you still think 1-0 up with a team with Fabio Cannavaro, Fabio Grosso, Camoranesi, Trezeguet, it's going to be okay. And they just collapsed, and it just really showed the underlying weaknesses of the entire squad, really.
We had another sort of 88 minutes or so just to enjoy the occasion, and there was nothing from me in before Zamora's goal that sort of I thought that it was going to change. And obviously when Zamora scored and then Cannavaro got sent off, I did start to feel as the game went on, it's actually going to happen, and amazingly it did.
Konchesky, Zamora, chance, goal! It took 6 minutes for Fulham to respond. Joy right around Craven Cottage.
It's hard to overstate how important Bobby Zamora was for this campaign, and yes, the goal that day summed up what he was all about, but it was more than that. And I think the actual first assist for Zoltán Gyökér was as important in the way that he held up play so well. He gave us an out ball time and time again. He was able to score goals. He was able to lift the team when they really needed him. And to go from a figure of somewhat fun, I suppose, at the start, obviously everyone knows the song that was originally sung about him, to this kind of integral part of maybe Fulham's greatest ever team, is such a transformation on a personal and on-field level. And yes, he was so, so, so good. I think the goal that really sums it up for me was the one against Shakhtar, where he just absolutely thumped it in off the crossbar from 25 odd yards out. And the confidence with which he was playing, the confidence that Roy instilled in Bobby Zamora, the confidence he had playing with Zoltán Gyökér, playing with Clint Dempsey, you know, off him, he just became a force of nature. And in this competition where people didn't know what he was about, didn't know what he brought to the table, he proved so many doubters wrong. Shout out Bobby Zamora. What a campaign.
Bad. Zamora. Certainly stuck. It's nice control as well. Gyökér goes down. Free kick. What about Cannavaro? How much trouble is he in? There's a red card coming. Italy's World Cup winning skipper is sent off.
Fabio Cannavaro sent back to the Craven Cottage dressing room. Here's Farrell on the moment that the old lady went down to 10 men.
I would say that was the big momentum shift, because even around the time of the Zamora goal, I did feel like Fulham were actually playing really, really well. We were creating a lot of chances and making their back line really work hard. You know, this is a back line that didn't just have Cannavaro in that, and obviously his red card was a huge momentum sort of mover. But, you know, they had Fabio Grosso in there and Jonathan Zabina, who, you know, excellent footballers. You know, Grosso's won the World Cup alongside Cannavaro, for crying out loud. And, you know, we had players like Bobby Zamora, who didn't even have an international cap to his name at the point, making absolute mincemeat of them.
The sending off of a player who was, even though past his best, was the capo di capi of this Juventus team. You say, yeah, they've got a chance. And then I think it's more than sending off, you know, I think it's the reaction in the ground to everything that was happening. And you could feel this just like lava, which is gathering, and you feel this is going to be one big, big eruption. And it was a continuous eruption, but it just went up and up and up. So every single thing which happened during this game, be it Cannavaro's expulsion and Guerra suddenly giving us hope that, wow, maybe that's it, the remontada is a possibility. All of this was part of the same process of faith growing within the ground, on the bench and on the pitch.
Zamora. Davis. Guerra!
The interchange between Bobby and Zoltán was electric. Juventus could have had 15 players on the pitch, and the link-up between our unfashionable front two would have still caused them problems. For Philippe Auclair, this is the moment that he truly believed the comeback was on.
When Zoltán Gera scored in the 39th minute, that I thought, oh, well, I'm so happy to be here. I think I'm going to see something amazing.
There was a good reason why Zoltán Gera was named Fulham's player of the season that year. And I was looking at his statistics from that campaign. He scored 10 goals, got 8 assists in 50 games overall. But in the Europa League, he got 10 of those 18 goal contributions. And not only was it that, he scored 2 goals in the group stage. And then this is his record in the knockout stages. Goal and assist at home against Shakhtar. 2 goals at home against Juventus. Assist against Wolfsburg at home. Assist against Wolfsburg away. Goal against Hamburg in the second leg. And obviously, we all know what that goal was. And then an assist in the final. It's easy to say that he was an underrated cog, but I don't think he was, given the fact that he was then named player of the season. I think he was the crucial cog. And yes, we already talked about Bobby Zamora and what he brought to the table and how well he held up the ball and gave us an out ball. But Gera was the 10. Gera was the man in the middle, pulling all the strings, doing the business at the right end of the season. And look, it looked like the Europa League was the place where he excelled most. Maybe it's the nature of the competition, maybe it's the knockout ties, maybe whatever. But it was these games where Zoltán Gera became an absolute superstar at Fulham and will go down forever in Fulham folklore because of what he brought to the table in this knockout stage.
Zoltán Gera, Damien Duff. Was that handball? Looked like it. Penalty!
It was a clear penalty. Of course. Come on.
Everything's going right for Fulham.
He just plays this in sort of blind. And I think the one thing you've got to ask is, how close is he, Diego?
It looked very harsh. When you look back on it, it really did. It wasn't going to matter.
I've seen them given, I've seen them not. That's what I'll say about it.
Zoltán Gera. And Gera levels the tie!
So the tie was level early in the second half. Remarkably, Fulham had brought back a 4-1 deficit and made it 4-4 on aggregate. If it stayed this way, extra time and penalties would be required, but just one away goal for Juventus could have been fatal. Here's Farrell on the tension inside Craven Cottage once that equaliser went in.
I do remember it was just such a tense period of time between Gera's penalty and Dempsey's eventual winner. And Roy Hodgson did what he did a few times in the Europa League when we're trying to battle to get a victory, was take off one of the fullbacks and bring on an attacker. And that's what he did that evening with Stephen Kelly. And Dempsey was trying to sort of find gaps in between their two banks of four. And when Dempsey came on, he was really starting to affect play. And I kind of felt like in that second half that I didn't think Juventus had anything of particular note. I still had that confident feeling that it's actually going to happen. It's actually going to happen.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
During this period, yes, I felt that perhaps Fulham had done as much as could be asked from them, and perhaps actually extra time wouldn't be necessarily such a bad thing given the numerical advantage. But yes, it's true that I wasn't sure that they would be able to find the means to complete the job, because when you thought about it, between Cannavaro's expulsion, between the penalty, you said, I mean, things had turned in Fulham's favour. And of course, there comes this moment when, despite everybody singing, we still believe, we believe, and so on, there was, yes, the moment where you felt maybe that's asking just a little bit too much. But it was a fleeting moment. And to be honest, it was I felt more than it was. At no point did I feel that people lost that belief. It's just that they became perhaps a little bit more tense until something extraordinary happened, which is still my favorite moment in the in football history, I must say.
To who? Dempsey. Dempsey will try and chip one. Wonderful! Absolutely brilliant! A sensational goal from Clint Dempsey may well have knocked Juventus out. Just one of the great Fulham moments. And it's lifted the roof off the old place.
So I could not have had a better view of Clint Dempsey's wonder chip. I was in my seat that I've been in for 15-20 years now, in the Johnny Haynes stand, block DL. I'm about seven rows from the front, and where Dempsey picks the ball up from Dixon Atuhu and swivels on it, I'm pretty much in an exact diagonal behind the trajectory that it finds its way over Chiamenti's head and nestles in that far corner. And just, it seemed to take an absolute age while it was in the air. It was just, it felt like one of those film moments where the music and the sound goes and the crowd noise goes off. And all you can hear is the shutters of the cameras going off as it sort of loops up into the air, and you can see everyone's faces with absolute aghast about what they're about to witness and whether it's going to go in or not. And the complete elation when that went in was the sort of confirmation of the relief that Fulham are about to sort of pull off one of the greatest results that has ever happened at Craven Cottage and in Fulham's history.
The press box went through a strange mutation in those few seconds, most of them quite happy to see Fulham do well and wanted Fulham to do well, but, you know, had to keep their neutrality. It changed into, we became part of the great magma of the crowd in our subconsciously pushing. We were not shouting, we were not singing or anything like that, but we were like everybody else. We believed, we hoped. And then, well, then the most extraordinary thing happened, which we've all seen at the stadium. First of all, gasping, thinking, he can't be doing that. He's just done it. And which is, you know, those maybe, I don't know, what is it? Is it like 4 seconds, 3.5 seconds from beginning to end, in which, the, you know, times to stand still and accelerate at the same time? And which define a fan's experience for life, I think. They are very rare, which is one thing. I'm not a Fulham supporter, by the way. You know that. I'm an Arsenal supporter. And I think it's very rare. It's even rarer for somebody like me, even though somebody who's got a very great affinity for the club, which is the club of where I live, basically. It's very rare that you have this feeling that of osmosis with others, and that you completely understand, completely share what they're feeling, and you're feeling exactly the same way, believe me, exactly the same thing. And I don't think I will again, because anyway, with the passage of time, talking to you about it, you know, I've got chills on my spine, because we absolutely went absolutely berserk in the press box, and we started hugging each other. I think I hugged Glenn Moore, was next to me, and we were dancing, and I, also with the steward. The guy was always looking, and I think still is always looking after us when in our press box, in our rickety press box with the wooden seats, and it was the most joyful moment I've ever experienced. I still can't get over it, and I don't want to get over it, because this is the reason why this game, even though I've seen plenty of great games and in the flesh, you know, and in many places, in Madrid, in Berlin, in Rome, in Paris, in London, in Manchester, wherever, this for me is the game that will never be topped.
Dempsey's chip felt seismic, a moment in time where things changed, not just for Fulham or even for Clint himself, but maybe even for football in the United States. Here's Jack on what that incredible dink over Antonio Clemente meant in a wider sense.
That Clint Dempsey goal, it's hard to think about it without it having such a cultural impact on not only me, but on the whole of American soccer, I suppose, in general. I think something that springs to mind is that working for Bleacher Report, working for an American company who deal in football, even now, we're still posting that goal every year on the anniversary, every year when it's Clint Dempsey's birthday. When Clint Dempsey retired, it was a throwback to when he scored this unbelievable goal against Juventus. And it was a goal of such quality, of such understated brilliance, that I think it has had an effect. I think that obviously with Fulham, there was a long-standing American presence that goes back all the way through McBride and Bocanegra, etc., etc. But that goal entered folklore in the same way the McBride's header against Birmingham did for us, I think. Obviously on a far higher scale, but we'd had Americans score crucial goals for us before. But I don't think that for Americans, they'd had a player score against such quality opposition, against a name of such renown in a competition, which was obviously new, but of European quality. And I think that ultimately, when you look back at it and you look at what Clint Dempsey eventually brought to the table, then I think that, yeah, it would have had a lasting impact on the interest of soccer in America. And that's got to be a good thing. We continued to build a fan base, to build a, you know, to build a link with America after this, but we had that before. But what Clint Dempsey brought to the table from an American perspective, I think, is massively undervalued.
Red card here. Sabina has stepped out of line, and Juventus are ending the evening in ignominy with nine men.
Sabina was one of those players who typifies this era of Juve. He was never good enough to be playing for the club. He had a terrible, terrible temperament. And when things were going badly, which they quite often did for Juve at this time, he couldn't handle it. And he insulted Fulham fans as he left the pitch. The same thing happened in Rome when he was sent off against Roma. It happened against Siena, where he was suspended and fined for gestures towards the crowd. And he just typifies really that era of just how poor Juve were and the mistakes that were made in putting together this team.
Juventus arrived here full of glamour, full of glitz, full of hope, full of expectation, and as tournament favourites, and they are on the verge of going out. And not just going out, but crashing out. It is fantasy for Fulham! They've knocked out the mighty Juventus. And even Roy Hodgson has rarely enjoyed a night such as this.
We did talk about being disciplined, we did talk about trying to keep the threshold low and making sure we won the game. So I suppose that even after the goal, they felt that the task I'd set them to win the game was still achievable. And in setting that task, I was always rather hoping that if we got into a situation where we could win the game, we might be able to go one step further and score the goals we need.
Roy Hodgson there following a special night at the Cottage. There were so many incredible moments on the Europa League run of 2009-10, but one question is whether this was Fulham's greatest performance. Here's what Jack thinks.
I think in my lifetime, it's hard to disagree with it. Yes, there were extenuating circumstances. Yes, we played against 10 men for the majority of the game, but given the quality of the opposition, given how many World Cup winners, people who'd won at top, top levels, were in this squad, to go and then beat them after already going 1-0 down that early on in the tie, I think showed unbelievable composure, unbelievable amounts of resilience. And I think it was kind of as high as we got. Yes, the Hamburg result was probably more important in terms of getting us to a serious final. But in terms of a performance and what Fulham brought to the table, we absolutely battered them. And I think that it's easy to forget that we hit the woodwork a couple of times, that the keeper made three or four absolutely world-class saves that we, you know, really, really dominated aside, yes, with 10 men, but also who were made up of some of the greatest names in the history of football. You look at Trezeguet, you look at Cannavaro. It's hard to suggest that those players weren't the absolute top of their time. Yes, maybe this wasn't the peak of their careers, but they are winners, and they are winners at top levels. So for Fulham to produce this kind of performance, having already had a setback of going 1-0 down so early in the tie and having the away goal wiped out, I think shows an unbelievable amount of resilience, an unbelievable amount of belief, an unbelievable amount of talent. And I do think that this will go down as the greatest Fulham performance of a lifetime.
Performance wise, I would say it's certainly up there, and if not the best performance that Fulham have ever accomplished in the time that I've been going. Of course, Juventus were a wounded animal and had a, you know, and they didn't have Buffon, who didn't play at all in the Europa League that season for them, but they were still a giant of the game. And little Fulham, and regardless of how you feel about Fulham and whether they are a massive club or not, to me they are still little Fulham. To me, they are still the club that have struggled in the third divisions for what seemed like an eternity, and to even just have the opportunity to take on, you know, the old lady of Italian football in a competitive fixture, let alone beat them, is a performance that everyone that contributed to it, even down to Pascal Zouzoula, who was brought in just to sort of be a figure in the dressing room. He deserves something as much as some of the other players in the squad and the players on the pitch that night. You know, there's probably a lot of people out there who, and myself included, who would say that the Hamburg semi-final was probably a more momentous occasion, a sort of better result. But in terms of performance-wise, I would say that this is right up there, if not the best.
But what about Juventus? Was losing to Fulham a big deal for them? Obviously, it's something they'd rather have avoided, but surely a club of that stature would just brush it off as an irrelevant inconvenience. Adam, however, believes there was real significance to the result.
It was huge. Probably not immediately for Juve there. Obviously, the rest of that season played out. This was March. But when Juve were relegated because of Calciopoli, the Agnelli family, the owners of the club, really took a step back and let the club be managed by various businessmen, various administrators, and really didn't get involved in the day-to-day running of it from 2006, when Juve were relegated, until after the end of this season that we're talking about in 09 or 10. Immediately that summer, Andrea Agnelli came back to the club as president. He brought with him Beppe Marotta, the sporting director from Sampdoria, and his right-hand man, Fabio Paratici. From there, they went on to build the new stadium. They brought in Antonio Conte another year later, and then became the dominating force of Italian football that we see today. And really, you can trace all of that back to this match.
So can this ever happen again? Was Fulham's run to the Europa final a complete one-off? And can any other mid-sized English club ever achieve something like we did again?
I guess the difficulty is how much you put in and how much you want to get out. It's one of those moments that felt like it wasn't forced, it wasn't bought. Yes, Fulham had Al-Fayed in charge and obviously had financed our way up the divisions. But in the same way that if Wolves beat a Lyon now, or a Dortmund or a Mönchengladbach in the Europa League, I don't think it would have that same kind of fairy tale element to it because of the way that they have come up. And that's no disrespect. I think Wolves are a wonderfully run club. And I think that they, you know, are the model that if you're looking at how you should come up from the Championship and really start to impose yourself upon the Premier League, they are the model that you should use. If Sheffield United were to get to the Europa League and be a Champions League side in the knockout phases in these kind of circumstances, that's the only side I can see the fairy tale kind of still being there for. And I guess the similarities between Hodgson and Wilder are there for you to decide if you believe or not. But two old school managers who believe in man management and getting the most out of a squad rather than individuals, there's definitely similarities there. Could Fulham get back there? perhaps. Although I think that if Fulham get back there, it's going to be to do with a collection of players who have talent and more talent than heart, perhaps. And this was a triumph of heart over all else.
A couple of years ago on Fulhamish, we spoke to the man at the heart of that Fulham defence, Bredaa Hangeland. And here's what he said at the time about the significance of that Europa run in 2010.
Everyone kind of grasped the idea that this is something to go for. This is something special rather than just moan about the games and the travelling. And I get the feeling the Premier League teams now, they see it exclusively as a distraction from the Premier League. And you have to accept that if you're going to play in the Europa League, then it's going to be hard. There's going to be a lot of games. You're going to feel tired. But I feel like in Fulham during those years, we kind of just embraced that, and we tried to push ourselves as far as we could. And sometimes probably our league form suffered a little bit, but would you swap it? No chance would you swap it. So
not for the world.
No. So I think for any team in England now, I think there's too much focus on just the league, and there's too much excuses saying it's hard to play in different tournaments. I think our case, the Fulham case, proves that you can have an amazing adventure if you put your mind to it and just go for it.
Well, we'll leave the final word to Philippe on just why that famous night against Juventus was so special and something that all in attendance that evening will remember forever.
Because it had everything. It was played at night, which is very important. It was played in my favourite stadium of all stadiums. It was a crowd which I thought that night was the most beautiful crowd I've ever seen a football ground. And a Fulham crowd, which means that it is totally passionate, but there was not a hint at all of nasty aggression. There was just an unbelievable love for that team. I have to say as well, I'm very fond of Roy Hodgson. I knew him a bit at the time. He became a friend after that. But I knew him and I liked it. I loved the way Fulham played in that season. And I don't think people have been given Fulham enough praise for the way they played, because they were not hoofing the ball left, right and centre. They had some really, really fine footballers and fine footballing minds in that team. I really genuinely liked that style of play. I liked the colour of the shirts. I liked the opposition between a smaller English club, but a club with a great history behind it, but a smaller club, and a genuine giant of European football. I loved the walk to the stadium. I loved the walk back from the stadium even more. I walked home. I didn't take bus or anything. I was just on a cloud. If I had lived 20 miles away, I would probably have walked there. So it's all this thing put together. And also the goal, of course. You have to have a great goal. And it was Clint Dempsey's. I mean, it is the greatest goal in Fulham's history. And I don't think that anybody will deny that. And it was a beautiful goal as well. So you put all of that together, you think, oh, a bit tough to top that, really. And even though there was no title at the end, which is interesting, you know, and even though Fulham had some other magnificent performances in this European campaign, which, again, I would say perhaps the most impressive performance was against Shakhtar in the previous round, because that was, you know, that Shakhtar team was absolutely superb. So there was an element of the underdog as well. And a perfect combination of circumstances, a perfect alignment of the football planets, which meant that those of us who were lucky enough to watch it through our little fans telescope lived an evening that, you know, we're never going to forget.
My thank you to Jack Farrell, Adam Digby and Philippe Auclair for their inputs to this special episode of Fulhamish, looking back at the incredible match in 2010. I've been Sammy James. Please do let us know if you enjoyed the episode, and be sure to subscribe to the podcast for regular Fulham discussion and analysis.